Before becoming an MLC, Paul Crane was a geographer, and judging on his latest publication, he still is in his spare time. So what is a population atlas, and why should we be concerned about the evidence contained in this second edition? Mr. Crane joins me now in the studio.
I produced the first population atlas long before I was an MLC. I just retired for probably the second time, I think, at that stage. And I was aware, I did research in population for an MPhil degree in Liverpool back in the late 1970s. And I've been researching it ever since, really. And I was very aware in 2015, 2016, that the Isle of Man had some real population issues brewing. So I produced the Population Atlas and talked about three vulnerabilities in particular. That was 10 years ago, you know, almost to the week, you know, 10 years ago. That I produced that. So I've now produced the second population atlas.
And of course, since then, we've had a new census, which presumably has helped produce this.
We had two censuses. I released the first Isle of Man population atlas in 2016, in April, just before the census was taking place. And you don't get the results of that then for nearly a year. So that was the 2016 census. Since then, we've had the 2021 census. And of course, in 2016, what the census confirmed that we'd all seen coming, I think, was that the population had declined for a period of time, and that the population growth we'd been used to in the Isle of Man that had been running from the 1990s, that had come to an end. And now here we are 15 years after that, and the population is still only 500 more than it was in 2011. So we've been flatlining for 15 years here now. And what I regarded as vulnerabilities in 2016, and what I'm talking about there is the imbalance of declining births, the imbalance of the island losing its young people, especially in the early 20s, and then the imbalance of the aged population here, which puts us up in the top 10 population in the world in terms of percentage living here over the age of 65. So we've got those sort of imbalances. I was calling those vulnerabilities 10 years ago. Now I'm calling them extremes.
So what's changed then? I mean,
it's kind of strange. You know, some people say the population hasn't changed. Well, in terms of the overall numbers, maybe it hasn't, but births 10 years ago were down, but now they're down very nearly 45% in 15 years. You know, the births have gone down and down and down. The 20 to 24 age group, we're still seeing them, and to some extent to the 25, 29 age group, we're seeing them far more leave than arriving. So we're losing our young people. And from the point of view of births, we're losing women of childbearing age, which is crucial for the next generation of births. And then we've got an ageing population. We haven't got a lot of retirement migration going on in recent years. But what we have got is enormous numbers of people in the late 50s, early 60s. They're going to turn 65 within the next 10 years or so. And when they do so, our population will age again, you know, and that creates issues of its own. You know, I'm in the 70s age group now. You know, I'm happy that I'm still contributing, and so are the vast bulk of older people. But you know, people are not engaged in the workforce the same. We've got issues relating to labour skills and so on, gaps there.
And I imagine one of the reasons why we've needed to substantially increase the budget in the health department is because the older you get, is the more likely you're going to need healthcare.
Absolutely, and I've got some good data on that, which helps to clarify why that happens. You know, I've got data showing the age-specific mortality data from the UK, which would be very similar. But you know, up till you into your 60s, there's a very small chance of dying, actually. You know, if you look at the data, if it happens to someone young, it's tragic, but there's very small chance. And then as you move through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you get higher and higher till, the chances of dying within the next 12 months at any point in this widens and widens. And that means that the healthcare requirements will grow and grow as people are older. So it's undoubtedly part of that picture too. Indeed, my understanding of demography, it impacts on so many areas of life, you know, that are affected by this. So in the book here, I've got I've got some general gentle chapters, one on population distribution. I've then got one on what in the Isle of Man has been a population slowdown, you know, as we've gone into these years of flatlining. But what I'm trying to do there is put that into a broader context, both British Isles wide and global. That may be a good place to start, actually. If we're
before we do, didn't the Isle of Man government head off about four years ago with a plan to grow? Well, initially it was to grow the population, then it was to grow the economically active part of the population. Are we about to have another census which might indicate something different has happened, or has there been limited success with that policy?
Okay, I think there's a number of things really in that. Yes, we've been through the process of having an island plan and an economic strategy, and within those there have been demographic elements. There has not been in that a clear, coherent population policy, which is something that I've called for a long time, and others as well on the island. Chris Thomas, notably, is more than 10 years ago, was looking for a population policy, some clarity, really. And in a sense, what happened over the population targets or the ambitions, for me, clarifies why we need a population policy that's coherent, you know, that hangs out so we know what we're doing. But in fairness to the Chief Minister on that, I know he made clear that the ambition of growing the population to 100,000 had never been the sort of official government policy. It had appeared in a document, undoubtedly. It was then put in front of consultation. So the document was a draft. It went to consultation. And there was some reaction against it, so it was dropped. And it became growing the infrastructure to cope with the population of 100,000 by 2037 or thereabouts. In terms of the maybe 4 years since that position, the population has grown, but very little. You know, at the moment, there doesn't appear to be a need to have an infrastructure capable of holding 100,000 population by 2037. So we're growing the economically active. There was always a plan to grow the working population, 5,000 additional jobs by 2032, and that's still in place. And we're possibly on track to achieve that in terms of the estimates that are taking place, which in times past estimates were based on people registered with GPs. It had some difficulties with it because when people left the island, they didn't deregister. There's an experimental method going on at the moment that Statistics Isle of Man is using. It's very interesting because it's based on income tax data, you know, and they can see who's come in, and I think people are quicker to want to indicate they've left the island when it's for income tax purposes.
Yes, I can see that.
Than when it is for medical purposes. So that's going on. What is the census going to show? Well, it'll confirm or not what's happening with these estimates, you know, and that'll be useful to see. The last census showed a population, 2021, showed a population of 84,069. The latest of these estimates based on tax data was for the end of quarter one, 2025. So that's almost exactly a year ago now. And the estimate at that stage was that the population have reached 84,975. So we'd perhaps added on 800 or 900 in that period of time.
And of course, all this matters because the economic model, which I would say successive Isle of Man governments have been operating on, is that the best way to grow income is to grow the population. And if you have, as your population atlas suggests, 10 years of flatlining, that's a big concern because the costs haven't gone down, and we don't seem, therefore, to be getting the the economically active people, the new economically active people, added to the population to pay for all the services, yeah, apart from perhaps in the last few years.
Yeah, you're right. When I talk about 15 years of population flatlining, you could say it's been economic flatlining too in many ways. And that takes you back to what caused this. In the book, the third chapter I get to is about births. And I wrestled with that for a while. And you talk to people and you look at the data, and most people would say, oh, the births have started falling after 2010. And it's about house prices, and it's about childcare prices and things like that. And that's undoubtedly part of the picture. But when you look at it more closely and see that the Isle of Man's peak in population, 2010, 45% almost decline in births since then. Jersey's population, the births, peaked in 2012, and they're almost on the same trajectory downwards. Mm. They've had continuous decline since then, but they're running sort of 2 years behind us. And then you broaden the look and you say, well, the Isle of Man's births peaked 2010. Between 2008 and 2012, the births peaked in England and Wales, in Scotland, in Northern Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, in Jersey and Guernsey, as well as the Isle of Man. And when you understand that, you know you're not just looking for things that happened here. This is much wider.
And of course, all this happens because people just don't feel that now is the right time to raise families. And, interestingly enough, I was giving a talk a few weeks ago about the Manx language, and as part of that I wanted to identify what the time in history would be where the most Manx speakers would have existed. And I got the Bishop Phillips's census or assessment of population from 1726, which was around 14,000 people. By 1821, which I think was the first official census. The population was over 40,000.
Right.
Now, that happened, I'm guessing, primarily because we had the pre-revestment act running trade, where we were able to make substantial income by selling goods into the UK without tax. Perhaps illegally, perhaps not, depending on which side of the fence you were sat on. And then the tourist trade had just started to kick in. And the population exploded in that century. Yeah. And it did so because the Isle of Man was a good, safe place to bring up your children, and you knew you had a realistic prospect of a good income.
The issue you raise there is an interesting one. My interest is with modern demography, if you like. So when I did research on this at university, I put a line at about 1950. I was only really interested in what happened after that. And there's enormous scope for somebody to undertake population research into the demographic history of the island. When I saw that the island's births in these last 2 years have been the lowest since 1918, and I look back to the turn of the century, and by the time you get back to 1900 and the last 10 years of the century before that, the number of births were running at 1,400 a year. Enormous numbers of births. Deaths were high as well. We were right back in stages one and two of what's called the demographic transition. But it's been interesting to see that. I think there's great scope there for somebody to look back at that. I've got the censuses back to 1931, but I haven't attempted to look at the censuses prior to that. But when you talk about is the drop in births to do with people viewing the future, so on, so on. Actually, there's an enormous number of things. And if you're looking, if you look globally, the peak births has passed in 2012, 146 million, I think, births then are down 10% since then globally. But the global population is not falling because people are living longer, So you've got this balance between these things. But some of the factors in that, we had the financial crisis, it gets called the Great Great Recession sometimes in there. We had that 2008, and that undoubtedly affected what's happening in the Isle of Man, but it was much, much broader than that. I've seen a paper suggesting that in the UK, the impact of that financial crisis has effectively cost the UK economy £11,000 per person in terms of its GDP in every year since then. Their economy has been off the boil for that length of time too. And it's interesting to see the effects of that. But there's other effects too, because looking at the data in the Isle of Man, especially data that was available on when mothers have registered for maternity care, which is not quite as good as getting the age they were when they were giving birth, but the age of mothers when they registered for maternity care, as we've seen what's sometimes referred to as Generation Z, Generation Z, as we've seen those people grow into the age groups where they're giving birth, so the number of births have declined quite markedly. So we can see almost a generational thing in this. And I hesitate to say that because I find some of the generational material heavily stereotyped. But it's just interesting to see what the data says, that as this group have got into childbearing age, and almost the entire childbearing population of the Isle of Man now is Generation Z or millennials, you know, those groups the millennials are regarded as the first generation economically to be worse off than their parents. So we've got intergenerational fairness issues and so on. And we can see the impact of this is perhaps global. And there's all sorts of papers out there on the impact of smartphones and the extent to which Generation Z and some of the youngest millennials are perhaps having fewer relationships, you know, let alone not having children. So we see these changes. The age mothers are now typically 30, 31, the average mother 31 when they have their first child. And that delay is part of this picture too. So the chapter on births covers a very wide range of things. And we can see that there's many factors involved in this. But certainly some young people saying, they don't want children because of the climate change, because of the state of the world, because of slipping optimism about the future, you know, and the current Iran conflict doesn't help that, really.
It certainly doesn't. Yes, I mean, the other thing, of course, about social media is that it's designed specifically to make you want to look at the next post. You know, it's an addictive thing, and as part of that... Yeah. Putting uncertainty out there and making extreme statements is part of that process of getting you drawn in to use it more.
It's
often.
Part of the picture, yeah. Mm, yeah. Okay.
Worrying.
It is. It's important, I think, that I get to some of the later bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because some of that's more positive, maybe. The chapter on deaths is very positive, which sounds a sort of bizarre thing to say. But... in my lifetime, the average age of death in the Isle of Man has gone up 12 years. So when I was born, 1955, the average age of death was 69. It's now very nearly 81, you know. So that's a remarkable shift, you know.
It's
been going up approximately 1 year every 6 years. So it's no wonder that the pension age has to rise in there, you know, and you can see the issues. And that's happening in many, many areas. You know, some countries have now actually got the average age of death tied into the pension age, and the one creates the other, you know, and that's sort of interesting. But it's quite a shift in there, really. But the island's population is still aging, and that's part of that is people living longer. Part of it is the people who moved here maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago who are now hitting 60, you know, and adding to this over 65 population. So that's part of the picture. In terms of natural change, the gap between deaths and births, in 2024, wasn't quite so high in 2025, but in 2024 we had... more than 350 more deaths than births. And I think that's the highest ever in the Isle of Man. I don't mean the highest recorded. I think it's probably the highest ever. Because as I say, when you get back into 19th century, 18th century, deaths were high and births were high. There was no big gap between the two. Mm-hmm. So I think I could say with some confidence 2024 had the biggest gap between deaths and births, possibly with the exception of the Black Death in the 1340s, 1350s. Yeah. Globally, the population of the world has always grown up to now, with the one exception of the period of the Black Death, when it's thought perhaps the world population dropped from 400 million to 350 million in a period, fairly short period there. So in terms of natural change, these are extremes. You know, we're in extremes in terms of reduction of births, extremes in terms of the gap between the two. These are extremes. And then I've got a chapter on migration. Now, these are the big components of population, births, deaths, and migration. And the migration's an interesting one. We've got, in the 2021 census, it recorded the people who'd moved to the Isle of Man in the previous 5 years, okay? And there were nearly 6,800 of those who moved in, and they were born in 134 different countries, which is quite extraordinary, okay? In a five-year period, the 6,000 people who arrived here, born in 134 different countries. But most of them were born in the born in the UK. Some were born in the Isle of Man. Some were born in Ireland. Outside of that, South Africans moving in, Philippines, Poland, a number of areas like that. And so I explore where the migration's coming from and then its impact on the overall population. So in 2021, the whole population were born in 172 different countries, which is an amazing level of diversity for a population of fewer than 85,000 people. And yes, in terms of I've been able to map that, you know, we can see the global map and see where the people are coming from. But despite that level of diversity, in the 2021 census, we had just over 94% of the population were the census question asked you to self-select your race, but 94% self-selected white as their racial different categories of white. So we've been in one sense very diverse, in another sense not very diverse. In the 2021 census, only 1.6% of the population had a faith other than Christianity. There were many who had no religion. Most were Christian, and then just 1.6% of the population split between four other faiths. You know, and so we've had a remarkably diverse in terms of where they're born, but not diverse in terms of race and in terms of faith. You asked about what the next census is likely to bring, and I think it's highly likely to bring evidence of greater diversity in terms of race and religion within the Isle of Man. You know, I think that's what people are talking about. You know, the migration that's happening now, partly because of what happened in Brexit and so on, and so doors shutting to people in Europe who had the right to move. Now those who have a right to move here automatically are just the common travel area, which is just British Isles and the Channel Islands, Isle of Man. That's perhaps a change that's coming, and that it'll be interesting to see what the data shows on that. So I've got a thorough chapter on migration, also looking at, because of some data that has come out in the population reports from Statistics Isle of Man, looking at how long the average person who moves in stays, you know, and there's evidence there that maybe after 2 years, you've still got 85% of them, but after 10 years, you're perhaps down to 35-40% of them still here, you know, that sort of difference going on. So that's interesting. Now, in all of these chapters on births and deaths and migration, I'm avoiding any of the politics in that. You know, I'm in Legislative Council. That doesn't hold me down in any way, but I'm avoiding it there because I'm dealing with the demographic information analysis. After migration, I've got a chapter on population aging, which is back to the population pyramids and looking at what's happening, and the population is aging. the immigration is making us younger. You know, those who are coming in are younger than the people who are here. So that's covered. But population aging is an important one, because we have got this growing and quite aged population. Indeed, in United Nations terminology, we're hyper-aged, is their phrase for the levels of over 65.
Well, and sadly, the last chapter, which is all about what we need to do about it in terms of policy, is going to have to wait to another programme, because we're just about out of time. But this is about to be published, and we'll have the opportunity to read through. Yep. And if you're happy to come back, I would be delighted to have you, and we can talk through some of the policy suggestions.
I would love that. The book is hopefully it'll be in bookshops by the Easter weekend. Okay, that's what I'm moving towards. At the moment, I've got some provisional dates in there, maybe for a launch or two, but getting it into the shops is the crucial thing. I should point out that I'm not in the House of Keys. I'm not up for election in September. I'm in the Legislative Council till 2028, and then I plan to retire a well-earned retirement. So this is not about my political benefit, and this is a not-for-profit initiative. I will not make a penny out of this. I just want to get the discussions out there, and I've got some conversations I'm very keen to add to and help to move forward.
That was MLC and local geographer Paul Crane. So what do you think? The data in the Population Atlas shows a worrying trend, but has government's work in recent years begun at least to move us back to an even keel? For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayos and Geistachrom. Thanks for listening.